Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Make It Sound Fiction. This is episode 10.
Episodes in.
10. Yes, it's a big number. We're on our way to many more episodes. But this week, episode 10, Make It Sound Fiction. We talk all things pop culture and media, all the things that we love. I'm Nico, your host with the most, and I'm here with my co-host,
Tyler, with the, I was going to say least, but that sounds really sad.
Yeah, that's not good. That's not good. Yeah.
But if you have the most, what do I have, you know?
Fewer.
Fewer. Not less, fewer.
Yes, not less, fewer. We're grammatically correct on this podcast.
I bet we're not all the time. Don't
no,
say
we're
that.
Really not. Really not. So every week we pick up our pop culture and media and everything that we like and dislike. And this week it feels like we disliked more things than liked. I feel like
strange.
Yeah, a very new feeling of us not liking things. But so interestingly enough, we kind of hit some interesting roadblocks with the games that we've been playing lately, which include World of Warcraft, but also Pyre, because Tyler's been playing Pyre on his stream.
Yeah.
Why don't you talk a little bit about what you're frustrated with Pyre this week?
Yeah, so Pyre is a super giant game. They made Transistor and Bastion, which are both games we like a lot, mm-hmm. I think. We had just played Bastion, too. And it's a very different game from those two games. So the first game is Bastion, which is like an action RPG, I guess is what you would call that.
Yeah.
And Transistor's like a... Is it turn-based or is it real-time? Because I don't remember. It's like an RPG as well, but it's sort of like...
It's not turn-based, it's real-time, but it's...
Yeah, it's real-time.
You plot out actions before you make them.
Right. So it's like, yeah, it's closer to like a turn-based RPG, yeah. But it's a mixture, it's more real-time. And then Pyre is weird. It's really weird, it's very different. So obviously, if you played the Banner Saga, it's similar in terms of just like structure, where it's a lot of narrative stuff, a lot of talking to characters and learning about them and maybe clicking on like a book to read that's like this big book about like,
The Book of Rights.
So it's like a lot of story stuff, and then it's broken up with like choices about maybe like moving through the world like in a path, because you're kind of in this like ragtag group of like people trying to escape the downside. All this is sort of text-based, and it's just got like a lot of art. The art's really good, as usual with Supergiant games. But then there's the combat, and the combat stuff is, how would you, like you said, like it's like NBA Jam, which I think I heard a lot of people talk about. It's sort of like, it's sports-like in a way.
Yes.
Where it's 3v3. You have a team of three, you pick three people out of your party, and then you go against three enemies, and it's on this like singular like arena.
Your player character is not part of team that's playing.
Yeah.
You are
like
controlling
the controller. Yeah.
You're the controller, and it's on a board that is somewhat miniaturized, and it's a little bit
top down view, a little bit isometric.
Yeah.
It's a little bit tilted. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like 33, and it's got kind of a competitive setup, but you are playing predominantly against the AI.
Right. You have like a star, I think it is, or essentially a ball that you can pick up as one of your three characters, and you can toss it back and forth to each other. You can pass it, and then the enemy team can do the same thing. And you want to basically score it into the goal, which is on either side of the map. And mm-hmm. A lot of the gameplay is essentially about dodging, because when you run into each other, you can like tag somebody out for a moment, so they get like, I don't know what you would call that, but they're just sort of out of the game for a few seconds and then
they
come
back.
They
have to respawn.
Yeah,
basically.
They respawn. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it, you can, and all of this stuff is RPG'd, like RPG. That's an interesting verb. you can make have like a character that comes back faster, or a character that can deal more or a wider space of damage. Because you only need like one hit. There's not really like damage numbers. It's just like one hit and then they're out. So it's pretty like clean in that way, if that makes sense. It's not like you're trying to like increase your strength or something. It's more about just playing. It's very I think it's sports-like in the way that, like, it's out. It's like you score or you don't kind of feeling to it.
Mm-hmm.
But the struggle, I guess, I was having on the stream, and it's not that I. It's weird because I'm still learning the game. I'm still pretty early, I think. But it's tough because it's strategic in the way where you have to manage your three people on your side, and you can the one key point is that you only control one of them at a time, and when you switch or pass the ball to somebody, you could then control them. Like you can only control one at a time. So that means you're swapping between the three constantly, and it's tough because the enemy team obviously is doing the same thing. And so there's lots of moments where, like, maybe you get the ball and you're running across the map to get to the other side to score it. And maybe, like, the enemy team is trying to stop you, right? So you have to dodge them by using, like, jump mechanics or sprint mechanics with the stamina meter. But then you also have to, like, defend your own goal, right? So if the enemy team has the ball and you're, like, maybe they got it from you because they killed one of your characters in the middle of the map. Now you have to suddenly, you only have two left, they have three people, and they can do all those same things, right? So they can jump over you, they can jump over obstacles, they can sprint by you, they can also kill you, they can pass the ball back and forth. So it's a lot of managing, like, their cooldowns. So it's like, okay, can they jump into the goal right now over my head and just score? Or, like, do I need to somehow jump at the same time to block them? Do I need to move a character with a big aura around them that will kill any enemies if they walk into it? Do I need to move her in front of everyone so I can kind of be a goalie? Or do I need to just try to, like, skip past everybody and not worry about, like, eliminating them or forcing them to respawn? So it's a lot to manage because you don't know. I guess this is the thing with me is I'm not very good at strategy games. You don't know if you should be attacking or defending. And a lot of people on the stream said stuff like, oh, just play really aggressively at the beginning and don't really go for the ball. Just try to knock out the other players and then grab the ball and then just score it when they're respawning, which works to an extent. But then some of the enemies have abilities where they can just, like, fly for periods of time. When you're flying, you're sort of above the board. So you can't, like, normal abilities don't hit them, flying people. So it's hard to, it's, like, hard to counterplay that stuff. So it's just, and it does this really quickly, by the way. Like, like I said, we're not that far into the game, and already there's so much going on, so many abilities, so many ways to have to, like, counter each other. It's just overwhelming.
Yeah, I think that's a good... We just went into a very long explanation of, like, the actual mechanics of the game, but I think a better way to condense this frustration is that this game throws a lot at you very quickly with a low amount of actual explaining how it all works.
Yeah, because that's kind of why I explained it that way, is because that's the way it comes at you in terms of information, is here's a list of things that people can do, but you know that you need to score the ball or not defend it, and it's hard to work through all of the intricacies of all the things that can happen and get to the point where you can just score or defend correctly. It's, like, hard to figure out what to do because there's so many variables.
And the tutorials only walk you through the most basic mechanics. They don't walk you through what the stats mean, because there are stats.
There are stats
that can get boosted. They don't walk you through what items are, how to equip them, how they affect stats. It doesn't really go into detail about what kinds of plays or strategies you can make. It doesn't go into what kind of team compositions you could come up with. It doesn't go into a lot of the broader stuff. And I think
it doesn't go into, like, the strategic part.
Yeah.
Like, one thing somebody said in the stream was, like, oh, if you have an aura around a character that an enemy can't walk into, you can drop the ball within that, which sounds like a really smart play, right? Like, oh, obviously I could sort of protect the ball within this aura, but stuff like that is, like, I think the game wants you to learn that stuff over time, but it feel, because, okay, I guess we should note that, like, one, there is a practice thing you can do later, a little bit later in the game, like a few hours
into
the game.
But it doesn't give you any hand-holding as to what you're doing.
Yeah, then the other thing, too, is that you never fail when you lose the matches, so if you do lose, like, we lost one, you don't, like, have to restart it. You can restart it. So,
but the failure is part of the story.
Yeah, the failure is part of the story, which, I mean, you know, I'm not a, like, I'm never I'm okay with not like winning every single one, but my frustration is not being able to understand what I should even be doing, because it really doesn't teach you or give you the time to learn how the game works. And I feel like Bastion, and I, from what I remember, Transistor also did that. Bastion has is a long enough length, and it sort of carefully like brings out the different mechanics and different weapons slowly enough that you can actually kind of play around with them a little bit.
And also does the proving grounds,
too. It has the proving grounds, yeah. So it just feels like there's so much more room to learn. And in Pyre, like, I'm really invested in the story stuff, but the combat is just not very long enough to make me feel like I should be, like, play, like, experimenting. I feel like there's no room to experiment, because I'm totally okay with learning stuff by just sort of experimenting, because obviously that's how I learned a lot of stuff in a lot of games, especially like Overwatch, because Overwatch does the similar thing where it doesn't really teach you a lot of the intricacies, but if you just spend time playing the game, you'll eventually learn that stuff, right? So I just think that Pyre needs to give you more space, and so it ends up being really frustrating, because it's like, oh, I didn't even know that that character could do that, or like, oh, I didn't know that I could like throw it over their head, or they could catch, like at one point I didn't even know they could catch the ball if I tried to throw it over their head and they jumped up and caught it. I didn't even know they could do that. I learned that in the game and like lost.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting and very parallel to Overwatch in that way, where there's so much intricacy because the combat is so deep that I feel like it would do well with having way more tutorializing and sort of way more foundational learning, which is something we've talked about in earlier episodes.
Yeah.
Overwatch would also do very well with these things.
Yeah, Overwatch isn't better at it, really. But
Overwatch is absolutely not, absolutely is opaque with how this stuff works. And I think that that's a good word to focus on, is opacity, is like both these games are very opaque as to how some of these things intersect with each other, how they interact with each other.
Right.
Because like, think about how long it took anybody to figure out that the Overwatch payload heals you if you stand next to it.
Yeah, some people don't even know that now.
Yeah.
And they add stuff all the time. Like in our Discord server, I said like, oh yeah, I bet nobody understands that right at this moment you can kill the enemy translocator from a Sombra.
Yeah.
Like you can actually destroy it now if it's in front of you. And people, and I think somebody in there was just like, I didn't even know you could do that. And it's like, yeah, they added that in the last patch. Like it's, and there's other stuff too. Like I imagine like a new player playing Zarya, they throw their grab out there and the D.Va eats it. Didn't even know that she could do that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I know that there's never going to be time for every game, especially if something as deep as Overwatch, where you can cover every eventuality. But it makes me wish that that material did exist in some capacity, because you basically get thrown into a practice range and you get told to hit F1 if you want to see what your abilities do, but the ability information doesn't even go into real deep. Like, and that's the thing with Pyre too.
Yeah.
I was just thinking about this,
I guess one interesting difference between the two, now that I'm thinking about it, is that like Overwatch, the games are so short, and especially in quick play, they just don't have a lasting impact like on your SR, your skill rating, like competitive, mm-hmm. the competitive mode does. And with Pyre, it's so linear in terms of like progression, if that makes sense. I don't mean progression like leveling up or whatever. I mean like the story, the narrative it's a story that hits these points where you have to have the combat. And so the combat feels like it's your one moment, even though you can restart it, because that's like a video game thing. If you press escape, if you pause the game, it says like restart the trial or the right or whatever. Mm-hmm. Something about the setup to it and the feeling of it feels a lot more impactful and like the one chance you have, versus a game of Overwatch where if you did get your grav eaten, I'll get another one. There's another game. There's the game after this. Like, it's something I learned. It's not that punishing. It's probably not the one reason we lost the game. Where in the rights in Empire, you could just lose that round and then you just lose it in the story. And I assume, you know, eventually maybe people will die because of that. I have no idea, you know, like,
yeah,
you just don't know. Where I feel like Overwatch sets itself up. It's not better, I guess. I think it's just different in a way that maybe just makes it a little bit less like it. I guess it alleviates that pressure because it's a little bit more forgettable in the long run. Where I have no idea what it means that we lost that one right, you know?
Yeah, could it have a story impact? Could it not? Yeah. We don't know because the game doesn't explain itself very well. And this is the one thing that I think that both of us were a little bit afraid about playing Pyres. We really wanted to play this game.
It's why I didn't play it for a long time.
But it's why I didn't play it for a really long time because just even watching Tyler play this game makes me like bored and frustrated.
Yeah, because it's just so much to handle that it's like, I don't even, it's a weird thing where when games feel out of my control like that, I almost get bored too, because it's suddenly like, it's almost like the game is saying, well, no, I don't really want to like work with you until you understand me. And so to me, it's just like, okay, well then I don't want to then. Like, I'd rather play something else then, because I don't really want to do this. I haven't really gotten that far with like Pyre. I haven't, like, I don't hate it or anything, but I just have small moments where it's like, okay, I don't even know how what I'm supposed to do. Like, I understand I'm supposed to like make the goal, but I don't know how to even do that. And the game just has no interest in trying to help me. And so it's just kind of, it's weird because I'm not super frustrated. I'm understanding that I don't know a lot about the game because I'm early in it. But it's also just like, gosh, you should really teach people better, because this is like, compared to Bastion, which is one of my favorite games, which you just played, like, and it's just, it's so much worse in terms of teaching you. And I think games, I don't know, it's some, we were talking about this, I think, on the stream or maybe after, where some of Pyre feels as if like either you've played like a sports game like that before, or you've played strategy games, and some, and as this happens a lot with games, is they're designed in a way to assume you've played that genre a lot. I mean, even Overwatch does that, where it's like, you know, the practice range or the whatever, the tutorial is like playing Soldier 76, and it assumes you've like aimed before, you've shot a gun in a video game, you know what I mean,
in first person.
So it's like, I think it suffers from that too, because I think it assumes you know about how like strategy games work and the flow of that a little bit, even though it's pretty different from a typical strategy game. It still has some of those core concepts.
That's one of the reasons that I bounced off Undertale so hard, is because it assumes that you've played a JRPG basically.
Yeah.
And it also assumes you've played a bullet time game.
Yeah,
I have done neither of those things. My friends are all like, go into Undertale and don't spoil yourself on anything. So I went into it completely blind, got to the first fight, had no idea what I was doing, and bounced off the game entirely.
Yeah,
and just didn't play it.
And that's funny, because I also haven't played a lot of bullet time, or hell shooters or whatever they call them. When I played Undertale, I had that same issue. It was like, I went into it without knowing a lot, and I started playing it, and I had that same thing where I was like, I have to like be good at dodging a bunch of things, and it's also like an RPG where I have to like understand what the characters want me to do, kind of like, you know, oh, this enemy is weak to this, so I need to do that or whatever. Like, sometimes I don't know, sometimes I think games just really do a bad job at trying to bring people in that don't play that genre or whatever. Like, even though I understand that starting from a place of like understanding like that has its own benefits, I guess, but I think that, I don't know, I feel like there are definitely other games, back to Portal, that understand, like, are open to people that are new to the genre, but then also have like an understanding, like, okay, if you understand how first person games work in Portal, you're gonna have a little bit of a leg up, but the game doesn't bore you.
Yeah,
you know, like there's some like middle ground where like it's actually elegant and it lets you be both maybe new to the genre, but then also sort of you know, already familiar, and it works out, and it's not boring, and it's not frustrating.
It just sucks because Pyre is so much about the story, and bolting the story on top of game mechanics that I do not care about learning or being invested in because they're difficult is really frustrating.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of where a lot of our frustration is we have to learn these things in order to progress through this story. And it does such a bad job of like on-ramping that it's like, any hope that I was feeling about getting just getting through the bare minimum of the mechanics in order to, like, understand the story is, like, difficult.
Right. And I think this is interesting just because we haven't talked about the WoW quest yet.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting that Pyre is an entire game, and it suffers from this. And then the WoW quest, we're talking about one quest that has to do with, like, riding on a vehicle, and you're riding a horse, and you're trying to, like, jump over fences to gain, like, style mm-hmm. points, and then knock out these little, like,
maybe you should get to your point before you go into just explaining the mechanics. But,
well, no, like, I mean, my point is that, like, it's a tiny little mini game in the WoW quest, and it still has the same issues of you have to learn how to play it by, like, understanding the few mechanics of riding on this horse, and it's under a time limit, but it's still frustrating because it doesn't have a, like, it, even if the scale is smaller, it still doesn't take the time to teach you, and it drops you into a one and done situation, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And it becomes overwhelming and frustrating just the same way as Pyre does. And I think that that's, I don't know, I think that, like, anything can suffer from it, I guess, is the realization I feel like I had this week, was like, oh, I can have trouble with Pyre, but they can also have trouble with this 15-minute WoW quest.
Yeah, no, it's a failure of explaining mechanics, and a failure of, like, UI, or a failure of a lot of things can happen in games, whether it's big or small, which is, which is the second thing we were kind of talking about with this frustration is so we were doing leveling in Battle for Azeroth. Both of us are leveling together, and there's always at least one vehicle quest per expansion, if not many.
Yeah.
And
which vehicle quests are? Yeah. Okay.
Quests are to explain. They are quests where you're not using your character's spells and abilities. You're using a different set of abilities that are generated by you stepping into an interactable object that is called, like, a vehicle.
Yeah.
So think of, like, getting on a horse, or getting in an airplane, or getting in a car. You know, for the most part in World of Warcraft, it's either, like, a thing you ride on or in.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah, an airship or a horse,
dragon,
or And you're primary ability bar is replaced with whatever abilities you're going to be using for this quest inside of this vehicle.
It's a way for them to sort of give you, like, a standard, like, set of abilities that are sort of, like, new.
Specific to a thing.
Give you a different challenge.
Yeah.
Than just trying to kill them with your, you know, your gear and your abilities.
Yeah, it kind of gives you a little bit more, you know, sort of, like, story feel and sort of... you know, feeling,
because they can do things like, you're a dragon, now you can breathe a bunch of fire, but you also have to, like, pick up these, like, people that are stranded or whatever with your wings.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, and it's stuff like you couldn't do normally.
Yeah, it kind of provides a little bit of spice with storytelling. It also provides a little bit extra challenge. The thing is that the vehicle quests have always been sort of buggy because it is designed for the WoW UI only, and a lot of times people use UI mods that change the look of the mod, you know, change the look of the UI, because the WoW UI is not very good.
Yeah.
So we both use UI mods. And so sometimes people blame the bugginess of WoW vehicle quests on using UI mods. Which is fine.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's fine, but I feel like, honest, in my opinion, the bugginess of those is just that, like, locomotion in WoW.
Locomotion in WoW is not 100% great.
It's not supposed to really be that, really. It feels like it is just sort of, it's more, because, I mean, yeah, it's just like, it's not a game where driving around in a car or something in some type of vehicle is very, is like very, I don't know, not intuitive, but I mean, just like, it's very,
like, it's not designed for that.
Yeah,
it's
just
really
not. Yeah,
it's really not designed for that. Like, thankfully, it's not like driving a vehicle in, say, like PUBG, which is just a whole other kettle of fish. So don't think of it as like that, but think of it as like, It typically is the bugginess is surrounding like getting in and out of the vehicle using the like keybinds in the game.
And the vehicle's bigger than you, so you're running into things. And also,
the camera sometimes attached to different viewpoints that are weird.
And then the other thing too is that like in WoW you move with WASD on the keyboard, right? And you change your camera with like your mouse. A lot of people do. I mean, you don't have to, but you do. With vehicles, that means like your vehicle can like turn on a dime, right? Which isn't really realistic, and so it's sometimes weird because like vehicles will often have like speed mechanics, so they'll rush forward and move really quickly, right? So imagine that, like, you know, with that kind of control, with being able to turn so quickly, it means that you can just like run into things. It's just not a very elegant mechanic. Vehicles just are sometimes really weird depending on what they are.
Mm-hmm. So we use UI mods, but I think the problem that we had with this particular quest wasn't really a problem with our UI mod interacting with it in a strange way, but actually how the quest was designed itself.
Yeah.
Because to kind of preface this, WoW has gotten better at making quests have more visual and audible elements to quests that sort of indicate where you start the quest, if you fail the quest, if you have objectives you need to complete in the quest. And vehicle quests nowadays have gotten good enough that they can like include interstitial text, include floating arrows to show you where you started, where you stop. If you have an extra objective you need to complete, it'll often say in big letters across the screen, like, and do make a noise this now. Too.
Yeah.
Make a noise or ding a bell or, you know, things like that. So we come into this quest and it does give you like a tutorial version of the quest.
Yeah.
Where you ride around on a horse.
That was a little rocky, but
it was a little rocky, but you ride around on a horse vehicle.
Yeah.
And you...
A
horse vehicle. You use a lance to hit a like little monster puppet thing that's hiding inside of a barrel. You jump over fences.
Yeah.
So it's very like...
It's like within this like gated like little arena. Because it's supposed to be
equestrian.
Like a... Yeah,
it's
equestrian. Yeah.
Equestrian sort of stuff. So you're jumping over... You're jumping over fences. You're hitting
things.
You
start this all off with a gunshot. Like you go after the shot. Yeah.
And you also have to throw a bola like thing, boomerang sort of thing, at a flying like little Zeppelin toy.
Yeah.
So you're doing these three things, and the idea is to rack up a certain number of points within a minute. And the problem sort of started when we were doing the like tutorial quest is that I noticed there wasn't a timer.
Yeah. Because there's a guy talking you through it during like that's kind of like they're a little bit more of a kind of extension of that idea of like just putting text on your screen. They started to do like, let's just have this character say it, which is neat. That's cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's no timer on the screen in the UI. There's also he doesn't even say like you've only got 30 seconds left. He doesn't say anything.
There's
like
no
that.
Countdown. Yeah. No, nothing like that. You have absolutely no indication as to how
you have points up at the top of the screen, but that's it.
But that's it. Yeah. You don't have any indication of the time.
You also don't even, I would say it also, because a big mechanic of this is that when you jump over these fences, you get style, you get a buff, you get a thing that it basically makes it to where you gain, it's like a multiplier for your points, right? So whenever you kill those little monsters, you get even more points if you jumped over some fences before it. And even that, I think, is not visual enough. It is a buff, so there's, you know, like it's a little like icon in the corner of your screen. That tells you like you have style points, you're gonna have like more points. But I think even that doesn't really tell you, like it's not even, I didn't even know I had the style buff for a while. Like I didn't even know that was a thing. I know he says it, and I think the quest text says like you should jump over the fences to get some style, and that's it. But it doesn't say like it'll actually earn, maybe it says it earns you more points.
It doesn't say that it's a buff. The buff doesn't indicate itself very well, and it doesn't indicate itself as being And I understand that the quest is trying really hard. Like, the quest text itself is going to try very hard to maintain the illusion right. that you're at
it
a
doesn't
party.
Say,
and you're gonna,
yeah.
It doesn't say, get this buff. But the thing is that's what interstitial text is really good
yeah,
for.
Yeah, I'm surprised it doesn't pop up and say, like, you're looking stylish right now or whatever. You know, it doesn't say that. It's just a tiny little buff in the corner. If you don't, like, scroll over and read that you have style points, you would have no idea.
Well, the text can also do things with the game mechanics that the story won't.
Yeah.
Like, you can use the interstitial text that literally will say to you, jump over the fences to gain
exactly,
the style
yeah.
buff and to stack this buff up. Because that would be very clear and helpful to the player to go, oh, that's what he's saying about style
yeah,
points.
Just in case.
Every time, just yeah. in case, because it wasn't clear to us at all. And it just, like... So the idea is you're jumping over fences and you want to stack this buff up and keep it rolling.
Yeah, because if you get it to like 20 stacks, whenever you hit those little monsters, you get a ton of points. So it's easier within that minute to get a bunch of points.
Yeah, to get a bunch of points. And then so that isn't very clearly explained at all. And then the third thing is kind of the zeppelins fly overhead and you hit them with your bola. The problem is you have to target them manually while looking up while also riding forward and
yeah,
jumping at the same time.
I guess one
time.
Thing to note is the horse never stops moving, right?
Yes.
It doesn't, I don't yeah. think it does, yeah.
No, it just goes slower or faster.
Right. Yeah, because you
can
also speed
up.
You can like,
yeah, so you have to steer. Yeah, you can like use a speed buff or you steer and jump
right.
at the same time. So for people who aren't as well versed with a mouse and keyboard, you are moving your mouse to change the camera angle while also hitting spacebar to jump, while also hitting WASD.
Yeah, because the buff, the style buff can drop off.
It can drop. So imagine doing all of these things while also taking time out to look up with your camera on your mouse and then click on something to target it and then hitting the 3 button on your keyboard to throw a bola at it because it gives you the most amount of points.
Yeah, you have to hit
to
them.
Do that.
Yeah.
You have to hit them. And they only come out at random times and
yeah.
they come out at
random
corners.
It's not aiming really, so that's nice, but you have to click it still, so.
Yeah, it's not just like, it's not auto-aimed or
yeah.
anything like that. So we get through the tutorial version of this without a timer, without any sort of visual or audible indications as to the time running down or what the style buff means.
Well, there actually is a timer on the tutorial one.
There is one?
Yeah,
okay.
Because I didn't know about the style buff, and so I didn't get it. I had to try it a couple times. But
okay.
The amount of points you have to hit for the first one is so low that it's really
it's
easy.
So low.
Yeah.
But then you get a different version of the quest a couple quests later where it's 300 points.
Yeah.
That is a considerable amount of effort that you have to expend to like complete this quest. And missing are any audible or visual timers
yep.
at all. Not in the quest log, not on the side of your screen, not at the top of your screen, not from the NPCs. Nothing like that happens. And you also have to get 300 points, which is a invisible strategy of actually figuring out how the like style buff works
right.
and stacks and is applied in order to like actually efficiently do this within the timer.
Yeah.
And if you fail the quest, it doesn't tell you you failed. It doesn't give you any
yeah.
visual indication on the UI that you failed. Your points just go away.
They just go away. And there is a debuff that you get that says, like, oh, the thing's over, try again. But again, it's another little square in the corner of your screen.
I didn't see that at all.
Yeah, it's there. That's the only way I figured out was, like, why does this thing go away? What's this little, like, because it has, like, a checkered flag is what the icon
yeah,
looks like.
Okay.
But
okay.
still, it's a tiny little buff. It could have just said the text, like, hey, the time ran out, try again.
You failed.
Yeah.
Yeah, or you failed, or try again, or
even the guy
whatever.
Said, like, wow, you got to try that again. Or whatever, like there's just nothing.
Yeah.
It just goes away, and it's like, oh, okay. I've like checking buffs and debuffs is a thing you do in WoW, but with vehicle quests, there's so much else going on that you know that you have to learn in that moment, compared to regular questing where it's like you already know all your abilities for the most part, right? So like when there's a debuff, you have time to look at it because you're not really reading anything. But in that quest, you're trying to deal with the fences and the enemies and the zeppelins, and now there's a debuff and your thing disappeared, and I guess it's timed, and it's just all so much to go, like so much going on that it's really frustrating because it's like, I don't know, it's like you have to keep doing it and keep learning through trial and error all these things you have to do, and plus, like you said, the part where it, the invisible strategy of learning how the stacks work, like, I was watching some videos of people doing it because a lot of people have had a hard time with this quest. Some people did it without getting a bunch of stacks and, like, just, like, were really good at, like, jumping over the fences and hitting an enemy and then jumping over another fence and just keeping the buff up. But, like, we had to do it where we just jumped over a million fences to, like, 20 stacks and a million, but 20. And yeah, then doing the monsters and getting enough points that way. So there's different ways you can do it, but still, like, nothing in the quest, like, tries to teach you, like, hey, getting a high level of style, like, stacks is really good. Or get really good at a little route of fences so you can just keep up at least one stack constantly. Or, you know what I mean? Like, there's just no... It's just so overwhelming and so, like, I guess obtuse to figure out, like, how to do it that it's
which
just
is
a
funny
bad quest.
Because they've definitely upped the amount of, like, helpful information that they put in front of you for a lot of these different quests.
Yeah.
They've developed whole UI systems for just these types of quests so that people don't have to look at a tiny little buff in the corner of their screen, because that's not good user experience design. That's really
that,
not.
Buffs
and
stuff
not good
like
UI
that are
design.
Only like that because there's not a ton of space on the regular UI when you usually play, because there's already a lot of icons, you know?
Yeah, it's like you have to make this stuff as evident as possible, and they really didn't for this quest, and they didn't even do it in the base usual ways that they do with quests, like the failed thing, the noise, the red on your quest log, a timer, like something failed along the way. Something didn't get added to this that would have made it a lot better. And that's why I got so frustrated.
Yeah,
because
the thing we were talking about is that, like, because the reason why they have all these mechanics is because what they're essentially doing is building a mini game within the game, right? So it's a game that has completely new mechanics, different rule sets. And, like, they have, I think the thing that, like, I think we kind of came, or at least I was coming to the conclusion with, is just, like, if you're going to make a game in World of Warcraft like this, or a quest that has these different mechanics, you have to treat it like a regular, like, making any game. You have to teach people how it works, and you have to give them time to do it, or like, visual indicators and stuff, because otherwise you've just made a bad game or a quest. Like, it's under the same sort of demands. Like, you still have to teach people how to do these new things, otherwise it's bad. You know,
and I don't you could know. Always be like, oh, you can just skip the quest. The problem is that you really can't in that, in terms of, like, sure, you could just not do it, but that means that your game on some small level failed.
Yeah.
To teach somebody, failed to engage them, failed that kind of conversion to play it. But also, you need it as part of the overall, like, achievement that you get for the zone. Like, in World of Warcraft, each zone that you quest in has an overarching set of, like, objectives with their storylines and questing that you need to finish in order to be considered to have, like, done the whole zone and get the achievement for it.
Well, especially...
Those achievements are tied into the meta achievement that you need to be able to actually fly in the world in this expansion eventually.
Yeah, because flying is not allowed initially. Well, but I think even regardless of the achievement, I think it's just... because it acts like it's just a normal quest, it should be like normal to learn, you know, because every other quest is approachable, because there is an achievement past what we did to get even more points in the 60 seconds that we're not doing, but you can definitely do that. Like, that's the part, like, if that was hard, if that was about figuring out the 20 stacks thing, then go, that's great. Like, if you want to keep trying for that big achievement, like, for the high level of points, then I think that's a cool challenge. But for a normal quest, you shouldn't be asking for that much strategy.
Yeah, exactly. Without explaining it and making it evident to people.
Yeah, because there's definitely other achievements in the game where it's like, oh, I have to weirdly game this thing I did for a normal quest to get this, you know, higher skill level at it so I can get this achievement. And that's like the fun of achievements, is to, like, you know, work on something.
Yeah, you don't have to do them. It's optional. This is not as optional.
Yeah.
So, and then on top of that, there's even the fact that, like, sometimes in World of Warcraft, like many other MMOs, how collision is detected is really buggy.
Yeah.
How events are logged is really
too.
Buggy. There's lag, there's server lag, things like that. And we were playing pretty much when the servers opened. So, like, you know, there's you know, things can be very laggy, things can be very unstable. So it's like, yeah,
there's so much stuff going on, and it's so rough, and there's a lack of information, just like in Pyre, that it's just the same frustrations.
And it's these sorts of things that kind of keep me away from a lot of video games, actually.
Yeah, because this is just like, that's why I wanted to say is, like, you know, here's a smaller version of the same issue, and a lot of games do that on bigger scales too, you know, even bigger than Pyre. Yeah.
Yep.
So,
and it's just like, I just don't want to play them, and it sucks because there's so many good games out there that mechanically just don't teach me and just frustrate me, and that frustration just means that I will just not play them at all, which sucks because there's so many good games on, you know, good on some level that I would love to experience, but the mechanical aspect has to be handled differently or else I just won't do them at all.
Yeah.
So the other thing that we wanted to talk about while we're kind of on this like train of pessimism, I guess, maybe not pessimism or negativity per se, but, you know, things that frustrate, is I wanted to ask you, Tyler, because I know for my own self, I don't hate watch things, and that's kind of a in vogue term.
Yeah.
Hate watching is you watch things that entertain you on some level, even though you really dislike them or you're disgusted by them, but it's like kind of the spectacle of like involving yourself with like trash. I know I do this more of like, I just love trash and I don't hate it. I love it. So I just like bathe in the trash, even though I know it's like not defensible and it's just trashy garbage. Do you do this at all? Like, is this something that you also do?
Yeah, I think I used to do it a lot more because I think part of like trying to like learn how to like be like critical of things is to kind of find the scope of like different media, you know, like the really bad stuff that you just don't actually really like, but you kind of want to know how it works or why it doesn't work. And then obviously the better stuff. I do this, I think, less now, but because I also did that too, where I definitely would watch stuff on like Netflix, like you do, or like Hulu, where it would just be like, this show is like really not good at all. Like, it's pretty bad, but I'm going to watch it. I was trying to think of an example. I don't know. I guess there's not a lot of stuff that I watch usually. You know what? Honestly, I think I used to watch like bad, like Food Network shows. Because I was like, I want to just know, like, okay, like, let's watch Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives and see how bad this show actually is. You know, like, does it actually have no respect or like understanding of like what is good about food other than just like a bunch of like gravy or something?
And a lot but of it stuff. Is good.
Yeah.
But that show's actually
Yeah, that
really
show's
good.
Actually not bad. But like, I sometimes like, there's other ones definitely on Food Network that are kind of bad. Like, it's just like really basic recipes and stuff. So, like, I remember definitely watching stuff like that. But, I mean, now I'll do things, like, on Twitch. I'll watch, like, XUC occasionally. I don't really watch him that much. But I've seen, like, some of his, like, streams just to see, like, oh, he's playing World of Warcraft for some reason. Let me see this. Or, like, Seagull. It's like, oh, what is he doing now? And it's like, I don't like these people. But I'm just kind of curious, like, what are they, like, why do people watch them? Because they're really popular or whatever. I've also done that with books. I've read, like, the World of Warcraft books because I just want to know more about the story. They're not all well-written books. Some of them are okay, but like they're not great. I do it less with games, I think, now because I have like, I guess, less time or just less care. But there were definitely games I played that were just like not good at all. Like definitely like just games that are sort of forgettable that I just play. Honestly, I kind of treated WoW like that for a while too, where it's like, I don't really, there's nothing like I want to like take from WoW like critically or like to help my like writing, but I just want to play a game where I just kill some monsters and, you know, level up, you know what I mean? So,
but I wouldn't necessarily say that like WoW is bad per se. I think it's kind of like,
yeah, I guess that's more comfort food than bad.
Yeah. Like, for me, I find that the critical pleasure of like indulging in trash is actually trying to solve the puzzle of like what's good about it. Like, what is good about this? What is like actually worthwhile to say and to think about it, even though it could be the worst of the worst of the worst of the worst? There has to be something good here.
I guess I watched like National. Isn't there two National Treasure movies?
Maybe.
I think there is. I think I watched both of those, which are really bad, but I just wanted to know why. I also watched, like, the Dan Brown movies, too. I think there's two.
Oh, wow. One.
Yeah, those are really bad. But I was just... Oh, I've also read, like, a Dan Brown book, too. I don't know why, but because I knew it was bad. I was just, I wanted to know.
Yeah, like, part of it, I feel like, is the spectacle. Part of it, I feel like, is, like, trying to find the diamonds in the, like, trash. And some of it is, like, I don't care if this is bad. Well, here, I think we should probably differentiate. There is bad, like, poorly constructed.
Yeah.
Like, which bad isn't... pacing, bad writing, plot holes.
But there's, like, something there that could be compelling if it just wasn't, if it was, like, structurally better.
If it was just structurally better. And then there's bad, like, offensive.
Yeah, like, and see, like, offensive stuff for me... Like, I'm trying to, like, what is an example of something that is just straight up offensive?
Good thing you bring that up, because I am watching Insatiable on Netflix, and that
and
is
that's so
offensive.
That's actually the worst one. It's not just, like, structurally bad.
It's offensive. Okay. It's structurally bad, and it's offensive. It's bold. And it sucks, because I really wanted to like this, and I'm going to try and finish it out. It's very rare that I stop watching something because it's so bad.
Yeah.
I tend to stop watching things because I'm, like, bored. But this show is so bad on so many levels, and I'm having such a hard time mining the, like, little itty-bitty specks of, like, significant anything from it. Because the rest of it is so poorly constructed and so poorly designed and so offensive on so many levels to, like, fat people, queer people, people of color. Like, the show is just, it's funny because it's not offensive in the way that we think of, like, bigotry, like, you know, saying slurs or things like that. It's offensive because I feel like this was designed to be for a very progressive liberal audience that also loves to laugh at shitty, horrible, dehumanizing jokes.
Mm.
Like, it was originally supposed to be, it was pitched to the CW and was rejected, and then Netflix picked it up, apparently.
Interesting.
Interesting, because I actually need to give the CW credit. The CW, to its credit, has had more superhero shows on its channel that also feature significant people, like actors of color,
yeah,
queer actors, queer characters, like non-conforming images of masculinity, like men who cry. Like, it's,
yeah, it feels like the CW is known for, like, not the greatest, like, highbrow stuff, but I feel like they've made a space to just have whatever they want, and it's end up,
because it's usually for teen girls,
right,
and people
yeah.
hate teen girls. But Insatiable was meant for teen girls, and it's just mean and horrible and offensive,
mm.
and I hate it.
Does
and
it feel sucks. Like it's trying to, like, cash in on that or something, or is it more elaborate? Like, does it feel like it was almost made for CW but just didn't, like, was, like, too,
it feels like,
doesn't
like
get
they
it?
Were trying to make it for CW, but this is definitely written by a lot of spiteful, angry adults. Like, it just, I read an interview with the creator, and the head writer was talking about how, well, all the characters are very flawed because they're driven by their greed and their selfishness. And I was like, okay, that's cool. I watch Billions. I understand that. Like, that's also a show about people driven by their flaws. The problem is that none of the characters are sympathetic, and they're so far past sympathetic that they're, like, caricatures. They're caricatures. That's the problem, is that all the characters are, it's attempting to be a dark comedy without actually being very funny. So it's just dark in a lot of ways and awkward. If you're a person who's ever watched a lot of films like Best in Show or what was that movie? It definitely takes so many cues from the movie that was about beauty pageants itself, because beauty pageants are a big part of the underlying story. Drop Dead Gorgeous. Drop Dead Gorgeous is a black comedy about beauty pageants, and it feels like it wants to do that and be that kind of, like, dark comedy sort of thing with a lot of, like, sort of dark or dangerous elements to it, but it just doesn't pass it off very well. So it ends up just being bad and not satirical and just mean and cruel and unfunny and awkward and then offensive.
Does it do that thing where, like, the... 'cause, like, I find that sometimes comedy kind of gets at the heart of, like, what people actually think, because it's like,
yes,
because the way, like, jokes sort of, like, layer on top of, like, these in, like, core ideas. And I does it do that thing where it's like, you think this is funny, but your starting, like, your foundation for this was actually just, like, offensive, and you tried, yes, to, like, cover it with a joke, but it doesn't, that's not how comedy works if you want it to be good and funny.
Yeah, because comedy is supposed to subvert audience expectations, and when the joke is, if the expectation being set up is bigoted in some fashion, you're just making a bigoted joke.
Like, you can have a joke about that, but it would have to be about, like, wow, look at this person that is bigoted.
You would have to be saying something about bigotry, not, like, so let's take an offensive joke, like blonde, you know, blonde women are stupid.
Yeah.
You are operating on the premise that blonde women are stupid.
Right.
And the thing is, they're not.
Yeah.
And so when you make a blonde joke, you're operating on a faulty premise that is considered normal. So you're normalizing that rather than making a
joke.
Your
joke would have to be about how that's wrong.
Yeah. Your joke would have to play with that. Right. And it doesn't.
It would have to be knowing.
If you're just making a blonde joke, you're not actually saying anything about blonde jokes.
Right.
You're just being offensive. And the show is just like that. It does it with fat people.
Wow.
It does it with just so many different things.
So that's so bad to me, because if it really is a list of offensive things, then that tells me that, like, somebody there writing that, whoever the writing team is, like, they all thought that, like, yeah, let's hit all these topics and it will be really funny because it's, like, totally, like, good to talk about. But they also are just, they just don't get it. Like, they're actually just, like, that's so bad. I just can't believe that there's that many things that this show apparently wants to, like, have, like, dark comedy about, but just completely fails consistently.
I don't know, because it's not in the vein that, like, Simpsons, well, no, I wouldn't say Simpsons, but, like, you know, Family Guy, that kind of humor. It's not like that.
Okay.
It's a little bit smarter than that, because Family Guy is very, like, white guy humor.
Yes, yeah.
And very, like, bro humor, mm-hmm, that thinks that caring about anything is stupid, mm-hmm, and that it's okay to make fun of everybody as long as you're making fun of everybody. No, this is, like, sort of getting into, like, making fun of things and then not realizing that you're also complicit in those things. It's trying to be smart, and it's not. Like,
is that worse? Or is that just different?
It's different. Yeah. I would say it's different. The fundamental thing is that it sort of is written in a way that feels very like old Hollywood, where it's a lot of, like, comedy writers. And I believe that the show is showrun and written by a woman, which, you know, white woman who goes, you know, so you can very much definitely say, and I will say this, that you can be a woman and you can be progressive and you can still say a lot of shitty things about groups that you are not a part of. So let's put that out on the table. It just feels very, like, mean, in such a way of, like, I know that Tina Fey gets a lot of passes for being like this, where, like, you're allowed to be a mean comedy writer if you're a woman, because you fit in very well with, like, a very, like, guys crowd of, like, but you're treated very, like, smart. And it feels like that. It feels like what person on a show in 2018 would write a joke and think it's funny that a boss who is a closeted gay man that it's funny that he's continually harassing his subordinate who's a man. But you think it's funny because you think gay men are funny. You think it's funny because apparently sexual harassment is funny if it's two men. So you sort of see what I'm saying?
Like, that doesn't really work at all.
Yeah, it doesn't really work at all, because sexual harassment isn't funny. Could there be a way that you could make a joke about sexual harassment in a very dark comedy.
Yeah.
Yes, but it would have to be so nuanced and so like.
It sounds like it sounds like the show just like lacks the nuance. Like they just really didn't think all the way through the writing. Like they didn't think through the comedy. Like
this show would be appropriate if this was like 10 years ago. It kind of feels like that.
Yeah.
It kind of feels like. Do you remember, like, old Will and Grace episodes?
No,
feels exactly like old Will and Grace. Oh, I'm sorry. It's that kind of humor.
Okay.
It's very
I can
kind of
get that idea, though, because I, like,
it, yeah,
I'm sure
it's very snarky.
Dated. Yeah.
But the problem is that Will and Grace were, like, a product of, like, the late 90s, mid-90s, when, like, people weren't as, like, quote-unquote progressive or woke or whatever. But we're not there anymore. It's 2018. We literally just got through 6 or 7 months of people being like, hey, I get sexually harassed all the time on the job.
Yeah.
Why would you make a show that has that kind of stuff in it? Why would you make a show about a girl getting skinny because she got her jaw broken by being punched by a homeless guy and you originally had the actress in a fat suit? Like, why is that supposed to be funny? How is that supposed to be funny? Have these writers been in a, like, hermetically sealed tube since 1993?
That's so weird. Especially when if it was supposed to be a CW show, imagine if they actually picked it up. Like, this would still be bad. Like, it wouldn't be like, oh, this fits for CW. It would just be bad.
It would just be bad. It wouldn't even fit.
Yeah.
Like, these writers are very obviously so out of touch with how we talk about these topics. And it sucks because they obviously have the funding from Netflix.
I wonder what other things they've worked on. Like, I wonder what.
I kind of want to look that up.
Also, so it's a Netflix show. I mean, it hasn't gotten picked up for like a second season or anything, right? Or do you not know?
I hope not. I don't know.
It always seems like Netflix shows always get like a second season all the time, it seems like, but maybe not.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Well, I hope a lot of people aren't watching this. I feel bad that I'm watching it, but that's the problem with hate watching is that you're directly with the way that the media landscape is and how statistics and interactions are tracked. I am participating in the culture that makes things worse and makes things that are bad keep getting money and keep getting funded. But it's like I just had to see how bad this was because I love teen comedy stuff. So honestly, I would suggest to everybody if you're looking for something on Netflix to like chill out and watch, don't watch this. Don't watch Insatiable because it's actually really bad. Just watch something else and like leave the hate watching to like something a little bit less
scrupulous. Talking about because like you said you don't really like hate watching is maybe a little bit better if you're not supporting the offensive stuff but just the structurally bad stuff
don't
not that you
this.
Always can know that going in but
you can't always know that going in you know everybody has their own like lines and preferences and stuff like that but like this is bad on so many levels. Like, yeah, stick to hate watching stuff that's just trashy and corny and not good.
Because I think that's most of my
stuff that's offensive.
For the most part, is like it's just stuff that's like structurally kind of bad. It's never anything too offensive, but yeah.
Yeah. So that's all I have to say about that. It's interesting as critics when you participate in media like that. I feel like it's something that we don't always get to talk about as critics a lot. What kind of sort of like guilty pleasures and things like that, because I feel like there's always this insistence of like pure moral ethical media consumption when it's anything but
or it's packaged a lot as like but actually this show isn't trashy, it's really good, it's got a charm to it, you know, like people do that too.
Yeah exactly.
Especially with CW,
and I think
people do that a lot with CW.
I think it's always good to be able to elucidate why something is good in the face of it being bad, just as much as it is to say what's bad about things that are good.
Yeah.
I think that cloth has to get cut both ways. So I would like intrigue other critics to watch things that they might not immediately enjoy and kind of glean good stuff out of it, but at least preserve yourself enough to not indulge in stuff that's just completely undefensible at this point, like Insatiable, because it's just bad on every level. But I think that having a large, voracious media diet isn't necessarily a bad thing. I just think that woof, there is still some bad stuff out there, and I think that it's not bad to waste your time on, like, you know, just corny stuff, but, like, think hard about the stuff that you watch and make decisions about it. That's all. That's all I'm asking. So I think that's everything that we had to talk about this week. So if you like what we do, love what we do, please support the show. Tyler, where can we find you on the internet?
I'm on Twitter at Tyler Kolb, TylerColp. I'm also on Twitch, which is twitch.tv/otterxpop. There's also my YouTube channel, which our Pyre stuff is on there if you want to see us get frustrated. That's just youtube.com/Tyler_Kolb.
Okay. You can find me on Twitter at Apple Cider Witch, on Twitch as Apple Cider Witch. Also, both of us stream to Blizzard Watch, which is twitch.tv/Blizzard Watch. That's all of the, like, Blizzard games that we do week to week. Also, if you want to support the show, follow the show, you can go onto Twitter and follow us at MISFcast on Twitter. Also, if you want to hit us up on iTunes, please rate and review. We will read them on the show. We will read reviews on the show, but it really helps us out. Also, tell your friends if you love the show. Retweet our tweets, like, all this sort of stuff. Word of mouth is definitely how we get out of there. We had a really great last week. So much, like, cool comments about the World of Warcraft episode that we did 2 weeks ago. And then we had, you know, cool people retweeting the stuff about Castle Rock and things like that. Yeah. We always love having people telling us how they feel about the show.
Yeah, you could even tell us what trashy shows you like to watch or whatever.
Yeah, definitely. Email us with the trashiest TV shows that you watch, and we'll read it on the show. And you can reach us there at makeitsoundfiction, all spelled out, at gmail.com. And yeah, we'll read it on the show. It'll be super cool. So yeah, I think that'll be it for us this week. And so we'll see you later.
Bye.
Bye.